Media TV. 2017 has been off to a cracking start. Lots already happened. De Gale, Jack, Frampton, Santa Cruz, a lot to look forward to. I'm Fighting Ed, your host. In the opposite corner, we have Adrian, the hashtag Greenland, voice of the boxing casual. Expert panellists joining us today. Terry, Dirt Dog, Chapandama, Junior, the Rhodes, Johnson. Let's not waste any time. Frampton, Santa Cruz, great rematch. Terry, your thoughts?
It was okay, man. The old boxing adage was true. A good big man beats a good little man. You know, I think they both turned up this time. The only difference is Santa Cruz used his tools better than Frampton used his tools. So, I was, good fight. Not as exciting as the first, but good one and close enough that there should be a third.
They both have excellent tools, as you said, you know, and I think that maybe the difference was Santa Cruz used his superior reach and was more composed this time round, really controlled the fight a lot better. But I think there's an undertone here. Shane McGuigan, has he been exposed for lack of tactical nous? You know,
outside of
the fighters he deals with having that amazing talent, can he provide the right strategy to win a fight?
I don't think you can beat someone with a look like a 6-inch reach advantage. And remember, Santa Cruz isn't a mug either. So, you know, once he got on his bike, managed the distance, it was going to take something exceptional. And it was going to take one of those punches where you throw it, you know, a Hail Mary punch to win that fight.
On his bike, you're implying that Santa Cruz is running. I mean, strong words. I mean, this is a Mexicana, Terry. I mean, they take that kind of thing seriously.
Ah, well, look, he did. You know what I mean? You count the backward steps he took. You can call it running. I call it, you know, just getting on your bike and you manage the distance well. That's what good boxers do.
Backward step while you throw a right cross. Junior, your thoughts?
Yeah, it's just like, it's two different fights, really. I think the first fight was more a fight, which suited Frampton's style. And the second fight was more of a boxing match, which suited Santa Cruz. I think the difference here was Frampton in the first fight was able to hurt Santa Cruz, which totally threw his game plan off and drew him into a fight. This time he wasn't able to do that. You know, Santa Cruz obviously kept him at bay with the reach and good counter-punching. It was a good fight. I mean, I'd be interested to see what happens in the third fight. They're both quite evenly matched, I think. Obviously, Santa Cruz has got the physical advantages, but I think Frampton's the better boxer and fighter. So it just depends.
Why do you think that?
I think he's faster. I think he's a bit more powerful, I think, at that weight, which is unique as well. I think, Santa Cruz has the better technique for me in terms of his counter-punching and stuff. But
just say Frampton's a better boxer. Santa Cruz clearly has superior time.
I think he's a better fighter.
But he's better tactically.
Well, in this fight he was better tactically. In the last one he wasn't. So
the last fight was a mid to close-range slugfest.
Exactly, that was Frampton's style of fighting. So it depends. In the third one, it depends what kind of fight they have.
You know? So, Junior, does the third fight happen next, or does Frampton need another fight?
Well, it has to happen next, in my opinion. I think we need a decider. They were both very close wins. Do you know what I mean? I think the third fight has to happen.
To be honest, what I saw was the third fight was very close. A lot of people thought it could have gone either way, but Frampton got the decision. I think this fight, with both having their trainers in their corner this time around, both having the right preparation for the fight, I think we saw Santa Cruz being the superior fighter. I don't think a third fight, in my opinion anyway, I'm not sure how a third fight develops or you know, the outcome could be any different. What could, Terry, I mean, you're close to the camp, what could McGuigan's do tactically, assuming that Santa Cruz is on his job next time round, that could result in a different outcome? What would the game plan be?
It's not something you can really answer, because you'd imagine Santa Cruz will come into the third fight as a different fighter. You know, whatever plans they had for the second one, you know, went out the window. And that's one of the beauties of boxing. I don't expect one fighter to show up the same way three times in a row. Frampton won't do it, and Santa Cruz won't do it. So, what do you do? You don't know, because Santa Cruz might show up in the third one and want to put a stamp on it and turns into a brawl. What I do know is, between the brains trust of the McGuigans, they'll have a solution.
Who is? I mean, this is a question we very rarely ask. Who do you think is a better fighter?
Between who and who?
Frampton and Santa Cruz. Who's better?
It depends how you want to measure that.
I'll say it like this. I'll say Santa Cruz is the better boxer. Frampton's the better fighter.
Have you seen Santa Cruz's fights?
Yeah, of course I've seen his fights. I'm just talking. That's my opinion. You asked me for my opinion. I think that's what it is. I think I just
what's the basis? What's the basis? This is box media talks.
I said
what's
it already. The basis for opinion? Power evidence and speed. Points. Power and speed are with Frampton. I think the boxing skills are more Santa Cruz. You know, that's where I base my opinion.
Interesting. I mean, one thing I think we all agreed: two world class fighters, and. How do you think Selby would match up against Santa Cruz? For one, I'm definitely a big fan of Selby, and I was very disappointed to not be able to see him perform the other evening. But nonetheless, he's a world title holder, and surely unification bout will be on the cards as maybe Santa Cruz's next fight, if not perhaps a bit later in the year. So, how do you think that fight looks, Terry?
I think Santa Cruz will run over Lee Selby, and it'll be a relatively easy fight for him.
And that you think he's too, on what basis, too tough? Too much power for Selby?
But he's just, at 126, he's all wrong for everyone. If what he showed against Frampton can stick, he's too hard for anyone. He controls the distance well. The jab keeps the space constant. For Selby's sickness, he's used to being the Santa Cruz in a fight where he's used to controlling the distance. I don't know what you do against someone who's seemingly that long.
Yeah, very true. I think the one thing I will say Selby can do is he can make adaptations and adjustments in fights. So it'll be interesting to see, after round five, what Selby does, assuming Santa Cruz, controls the distance, what change Selby's able to make to actually make it competitive. Because I'm a big fan of Selby in terms of boxing ability. It'd be interesting to see him matched up against someone with close to the same boxing ability, but that added toughness of a Santa Cruz. So definitely a lot to look forward to, in featherweight division and down at super bantam as well, because Frampton still has options there, of course. The hashtag. A lot going on. Take it away.
Yeah. It's been a great year so far, 2017, for boxing. There's more to come. Obviously, just kind of leading on from the Frampton Selby side of things, we had Mikey Garcia in action. Devastating knockout. So I just wanted to get you guys' take on where he goes next. There's been so many names. There's been the Adrian Broner is mentioned in the news. Make sure you check out Box Media TV as well. We've got all the news featured on there. But yeah, I heard Broner's name in the mix today. Where does he, Conor Linares, where does he fit within the lightweight division?
I think it has to be Linares, doesn't it? I think he needs to solidify himself at that weight first and then go up and chase the super fight. If I was him, I'd fight Linares next and maybe the winner of, if he's successful in that fight, maybe the winner of Ricky Burns and the other dude that he's fighting, Hidalgo. Yeah, that puts him in a good basis for a super fight.
Is Ricky Burns a super fight?
No, it's not a super fight. I'm saying it builds up super fights to Crawford, to Broner. That's where the super fights are at, the weight above. So if he solidifies himself by beating Linares and then stepping up to face the winner of the Ricky Burns fight, he puts himself in a great position at 140 for super fights, and the money will be there.
Terry, where do you see him in the division?
Tricky. I thought it was a fight Taylor made for him. I called it. It was a showcase fight for Garcia. I don't think Zlatichin and those idiots on Sky like to call him. We'll just call him Zlatic Cannon because that's how it's written. I don't think he's anything, man. I think it just exposes how bad Ricky Burns was. And if I'm Garcia, I'll stay at 135 for a bit. Can Golden Boy get Gamboa up to 135? Incredible. It's a good name and it's a good challenging fight for Garcia. I think Garcia wins that one. And then the Americans will probably call for someone like Verdejo to fight next. I mean, there are guys in America he can beat without having to move anywhere. And then, you know, eventually you have him a fight for a belt. Maybe you fight Linares. Maybe you fight the winner of Flanagan, Petrov. You know, there's no rush to move up to 140 just yet. Mikey Garcia has been out for 2 and a bit years. So let's, you know, let him get the chance. I think boxing fans are too quick to want people to start fighting in unifications. And I was hearing some nonsense about Gervonta Davis fighting in unification belts. And I was like, look, you want a belt. You're a young man. Have a few defenses where you can just learn your craft. And I think Garcia, in a different way, just needs a few bouts to get his seasoning back and then, you know, start to kick on from there.
Yeah, to improve that. I think it's the potential super fights, you know, at his current weight, you know, towards the end of the year or very early next year, you know, that Garcia Linares could be a super fight. You know, if they both continue on the correct trajectory. So I agree with your point there, Terry. I think you're right. And when the time is right, if it's right, move up and then, you know, explore options at the higher weight division.
Yeah, interesting point. I don't know. Is that division? Is it a bit of a nothing division? Is it two or three main guys and then
which division?
The lightweight division.
Come on, you've got the old stages like Gamboa, Ray Beltran, who are good fighters. You've got the up and coming guys like Robin Easter Jr., Rancis Bartholomew. It's a very talented division.
It is about timing as well, because I even heard about Easter Jr. thinking about moving up. So I don't know.
Easter Jr. is 8 foot tall, so I would understand him wanting to move up. It can't be easy making weight when you're as big as he is.
Do you think Broner risks?
It's probably a fight most people would avoid, in the same way a lot of people avoid the Thomas Hearns at welterweight.
Do you think Broner will throw Easter Jr. in there with Garcia at this stage, or make him season a bit more?
I think you can ask it. I think the question should be asked the other way around. Would you throw Garcia in there with Easter Jr. right now?
Easter Jr. is a quality fighter.
I think Garcia would fight anybody at that weight.
Look, if
the fighters would fight anyone. The fighters would believe they could be anyone. It's
if Comey can drop Robert Easter Jr.'s debatable as a knockdown was, rest assured Garcia can get to him as well.
Yeah.
So it's not out the realms of possibility. But then if Easter Jr. boxes his full height, it's just a hard day at the office for anyone.
Well, moving on, moving back, should I say? Obviously, DeGale Jack, boxing Ed, is a fond follower of James DeGale. So Ed, initially, kind of I guess your analysis on the fight and where does Jack go? Where does Jack's obviously moved up? Where does DeGale go from there? There's a lot of domestic action. You got the Eubank talk. You got the Groves talk. I mean, that's exciting, surely.
So very briefly on the fight, I think having watched it back as well, I think it was a fight of two halves. In the early rounds, I think DeGale was phenomenal. You know, I think particularly he really made Jack look quite silly. He schooled him, as he said himself. He boxed his head off. Some of his lateral movement on the inside, you know, it was fantastic. I think he boxes at a very high pace, and so when his tempo dropped, it was quite drastic. And there were some worrying middle rounds for him when Jack took control of the fight. I think what the girls may be failing in the fight after really schooling Jack was that when things got tougher, when his energy levels dipped, so his speed dropped a bit, that ability to tuck up, have a really solid base, and throw sharp shots, whether short or mid-range, down the middle, down the pipe, while having a secure guard, much akin to what Jack had, wasn't there.
Look, Ed, I'm going to have to stop you. It's a 12-round fight. Everyone fights for 12 rounds. That's his standard. Why every time? It's not like it's a coincidence now. Every time, he's dipping. He's dropping off at about 5. Why? It's not normal. I don't see fighters do that on a regular basis.
I think it's not... people will question his strength and conditioning. And Junior, our panelist questioned his strength and condition. I think his condition is excellent. I think maybe his strength could be an issue, his strength endurance. I think also his ability to pace a fight. When you run a marathon, you have a set pace per mile. If DeGale is pretty much established as a 12-round fighter now, you know, he doesn't put them away. But he fights at a tremendous rate for the first 5 rounds. And he's obviously not able to maintain that. So he has two options. One is to fight at a slightly lesser rate in the earlier round, so you can maintain it for the 12th, or to develop a different tactic in the second half of the fight, where you're much more solid and able to fight whilst remaining, you know, without having as much foot movement because you're too tired to move as much.
Do you know?
And, you know, have a solid base in defence.
I agree with most of that, but I don't think the girl's problem is conditioning. I think Jim McDonald is a wonderful trainer in getting his fighters fit, but I think it's more of a mental thing. He seems to switch off mentally in the middle rounds, you know. And I think we need to give Jack some credit here, because it was a body shot that totally stopped the girl's movement and made him fight Jack's fight, the inside fight. It was a body shot. I remember watching it and I was cheering on the girl, like you, Ed. I thought he was dominating the fight brilliantly on the outside. The body shot hit him and I had to sit down. I was standing up. I felt that myself watching it, you know. So I have to give DeGale some props where it comes to toughness as well. He showed a lot of toughness in that fight because he got hit with some ferocious shots. But we have to give Jack some credit as well in changing the fight. And him working the body there stopped DeGale's movement and drew him inside, which was more his style of fighting.
He definitely took the wind out of him. What I would say, well, Terry, is James DeGale number one taking too much punishment in his career? Over the last few fights, he's taken a lot of punishment. You've seen the way he's looked after the fights. Is he taking too much punishment? And how do you see the next two fights for him? And who are they against?
He marks up easily. So it's deceptive. You know, Jack's got that West African skin, so you don't see the damage as much. But both those men went to hell and back in that fight.
Mm.
This is all taking years of James DeGale. James DeGale's not young. He's 30, 31? You know,
I don't think he's that old.
Of his career now in terms of physical capabilities. So, in light of that, you're really looking at four key fights for him. To be honest, if I was DeGale, I'd be talking to Al Haymon about a fight with, you know, someone like Gilberto Ramirez. It's a unification. He can finally say he's a unified champion. You know, he won't get the rematch with Jack, so you start to look at guys like Groves and Callum Smith for a domestic showdown, which I think makes sense. You know, I don't think he wants the Groves fight. I think Groves beats him hands down.
How interesting is the Groves? You think Groves wipes the floor of him?
Yes, because I think we've established something with James DeGale now. He struggles against anyone with an iron will and a good jab. He struggles. Anytime someone's put a jab into DeGale's face, he struggles. And anytime he hits them and doesn't get that visual reaction that validates what he's just done, he struggles. That's why I think he drops off when people
So Groves has a good jab and an iron will?
I think so, yeah.
So because Shane McGugan says he has the best jab in the business, which he started saying when he took over.
Well, he has the best jab in the division by a long way. It's world class. DeGale doesn't have a jab for a start, so you know it's an easy channel for him to exploit.
I think DeGale definitely has a jab. I think DeGale,
How about you post it to him in that case?
Yeah, he has a much more versatile and cultured jab than Groves. Groves has been, in fact, Groves, because of what I can see, the guidance been given by Shane McGugan and the, you know, Groves' marketing team telling me he has a great jab. In the past few fights, what I've seen him is pumping out this jab in a very unsophisticated manner, and kind of a haphazard manner. And to be quite frank, the way he's been instructed to pump out his jab actually takes away from his natural core balancing position. And that's why in the past few fights, he hasn't been delivering the right hand with the same ferocity. Because he's off balance, he's not in the right position. He boxes much better when he throws a jab less frequently, but hits hard and direct, and he's always positioned to follow with a right hand. So now he's a much more sideways fighter, and I don't think it works. I think, you know, whether Shane McGuigan's or Groves' marketing team, they decided to rebrand him after the knockout in front of 80,000 from the Cobra, decided to rebrand him as having the best jab in the business. I think it's nonsense.
Well, maybe. I'm sure Shane would be interested in your views, you know, happy to share those with him. You know, I'm sure he's looking for that missing piece of expertise.
I mean, the jab's up for the debate, but certainly someone who's got a bit more than a jab is Callum Smith. Does he cause him any problems? Junior.
So let's be clear. Let's be clear. And Junior, you please chip in here. When you say Callum Smith has a bit more than a jab, Callum Smith doesn't have a jab.
I bypassed the jab to the right hand. But yeah, Junior.
Well, we've debated Callum Smith for a long time. I've always felt like he's a massive super middle. I mean, what is he, 6'3", 6'4"? He could probably fight at heavyweight. So he should be dominating, a bit like Santa Cruz, really. He should be dominating at range. But he hasn't shown that in his fights so far, especially in the fielding fight. You saw him fight more close up, but he was dominant in that fight. So it depends. Maybe he's got something in his locker that we haven't seen yet that he's going to unleash on the likes of DeGale and Groves and the rest of them. We don't know yet. But if he fights to what we've seen already, then you have to favour DeGale and Groves over him at the moment.
Well, I mean, the super middleweight division, there's a lot going on there.
Mm.
We've got another name in the mix, Chris Eubank Jr. Mm. First and foremost, Terry, is Eubank Jr. pay-per-view, is it fair? You've seen that outrage. Is it fair paying £10 for Eubank pay-per-view?
Well, let's be clear. You're paying £10 for the card. At the top of the bill is Chris Eubank.
Yeah, for the card.
I think Chris Eubank Jr. is the most bankable star that's not called Anthony Joshua in this country. Whether you watch him to see him win or see him lose, you'll always watch him present himself well. You know, in a sport where, you know, there are a lot of undesirable characters and personalities within boxing, and historically that's been the case. Here you have a man in Chris Eubank Jr. who's able to communicate effectively, and he's able to communicate in that way that doesn't alienate people. I think having his dad as the bad guy helps his marketability as well, because it just said, you know, Chris is like the suffering son. But £10 for that card, let's be honest. Like, if you look at what Sky are offering in February, and you're paying your Sky membership, you know, you're getting a far better deal with ITV. I think Price Christian Hammer is a fight of meaning, because if Hammer can beat David Price, then that's the end of David Price. If Price can beat Hammer, then he's dealt with one of the gatekeepers to the elite level, which is good. We all want to see Kid Galahad do something, because it makes 126 interesting. And then you've got the young guys coming through, like Jordan the Menace Dennis. You've got Chris Kongo on there as well. You've got a nice mix. And, you know, if this was a card that was £20, I'd complain. But, you know, at half the price, I think it's worth it. And I know people have complained about you have to register on the ITV website. I had a good conversation with one of the guys at ITV. And the simple explanation is this. You have to register once, so you're an ITV customer. After that, they're then able to say, well, actually, we've got you on record. Then they just pass the records over to Sky. Sky sorts out the billing. And then everything's resolved that way. So,
you make a good point there. As well, let's not, you know, with the level of competition we're seeing in the boxing kind of market this year, from promotional and a viewing perspective, I mean, let's not get sucked into the commercial models of these different pay-per-view events, right? Let's assume they're all a bit more than we care to pay, but with boxing enthusiasts, and if we can, if it's reasonable, we'll figure out a way of watching it, whether it's even on the internet the day after. The question we should be asking is about the validity of the fight. Chris Eubank's first foray in the super middleweight division. And what we should be questioning, if anything, is legitimacy of the world title, perhaps, and the opponent.
Yeah.
I've done a bit of research on the opponents. You know, I wasn't sure where or how he'd learned to box, because he seemed very cumbersome and to lack any real skill or boxing ability. And that would be more my concern. Is it legitimate world title? Is it a worthwhile fight aside from the bankability side of things? What are we gonna, as boxing enthusiasts, what do we look forward to enjoying in the main event next Saturday?
Yeah, I 100% agree with that analogy as well, because it's more the opponent that he's fighting than anything else. I'd have liked to have seen him fight a different name at 168, maybe even Chudinov, the WBA guy, Tyrone Zuge. If he could have got a fight with even Andre Durow, I'd like to see him in there with a proper name to pay the money, for me, personally. That's the only reason I want to fight. But hold on, but I do like the card. It's just the main event isn't selling it for me.
Yeah, I agree with that.
What boxer, having never won a world title, would move up a whole weight division and start fighting the guys who hold the belts? It's probably not the way boxing's done. I to be honest, think Eubank Jr. hasn't finished business at 160. I think the 168 is just so he doesn't have to kid himself making weight. I don't think he should be fighting the big guys at 168 just yet, because as we've learned in boxing, there are weight classes for a reason.
I think both myself and I think that Junior probably agrees with that, you know, in terms of if he's going to try and, if this was a permanent step into like middleweight, he'd have to work his way up to the best fighters. But what we're saying is, as consumers, you know, as people, you know, who have the option of just purchasing this pay-per-view event, do we agree with the validity of the boxing, the skills that will be on display, and the event that we're going to see in terms of the main event?
As a consumer, Ed, I think to this point already, seeing the interview, seeing the build-up, the fact they're putting on at View Cinemas, I feel like it's an event already. They've built an event. It's almost
Have you seen a clip of Quinlan fighting?
Yeah, I've seen that. But then you have to be careful. You have to be very, very careful, because you can't slip into the model of thinking Eddie Hearn is king. And some of the things that Eddie Hearn's done over the last 18 months, especially for Anthony Joshua, has been Charles Martin. There you go. So you have to be careful. Just because it's on ITV and just because we're being asked to pay, we shouldn't immediately assume that we're being ripped off. Because that's my immediate kind of reaction when I got from the fans. And I felt the same way as well. I was like, why am I paying for ITV? But I took a step back and I thought about Frampton Quigg maybe. And the Eddie cards, where I feel like I've been shortchanged after a few Peronis on a Saturday night with watching Eddie. It's not on. So I feel like there's an event here, and it's a building block. Junior mentioned about the super middleweight division, and the top guys. But I think it's a good little startup fight.
I'll tell you what, I would have paid for the £9.95. I'd have paid that if they had the Shannon Briggs and the Quendo fight on it as well. If they added that, I'd have paid that. But as the main event is Chris Eubank versus Quinlan. I don't want to see that, really. As a boxing fan,
why would you sit on your house on a Saturday night knowing that fight's on and not pay the tenner? If you're with three of your guys, you chip in, you pay £3.70 or whatever it is each, and then you're good. I don't see what the issue.
I think it's not for that fight. And I think maybe back to Terry's point, it's about the whole card, because in the past, apart from maybe the Dillian White fight, when the Joshua card that Joshua's headlining. The main event is normally him beating up a taxi driver or just having to go in a punch bag for a couple of rounds. It's the other fights that matter. And there is some, as you mentioned, Congo and the other guy. There's some good talent on display that's probably worth paying to see, you know, and that's what's going to interest me. Haven't seen Quinlan fight, seen the Gill fight. I've seen enough that I know what he brings. Now, I don't know if he's a boxer or not, to be quite honest.
So Ed, let's... I guess focus on maybe not necessarily this fight, because I'm sure we're all in agreement that Chris Eubank Jr. will win. Number one, is his weight division going to be more predominantly middleweight focused? And number two, how far can he go? Can he be a world champion? A real, I guess, WBC, WBA, WBO world champion.
Well, a super middleweight.
As a super middleweight.
As a either middleweight or super middleweight.
So I think he has potential to do both. I think, you know, over the next 3 years, he'll grow into the super middleweight division. And I think in the super middleweight division, if you have a good analogy against him, like someone like the Gale or Groves, if he can comport himself well in the first five rounds against the Gale or Groves, he's likely to win the fight.
Terry, how good is he?
I don't think we know yet. You know, after the Billy Joe fight, which I think is that kind of... That fight was a defining fight where two prospects meet and then you want to know what both of them are going to do. Billy Joe won the fight and has gone on to win a world title. Eubank seems to have stalled a bit. The problem he has is, in going looking for a belt, he has two options. He has Billy Joe Saunders, who will not do any business with him, or he has Golovkin. Now, both of them present pain for different reasons, but you're essentially looking at Chris Eubank Jr. going, okay, you box at 160, you might fight Golovkin, you might lose, don't know. But then you move to 168, and there are no real defining fights for him there, because he's a generation behind the Groveses and the DeGales, even Callum Smith to an extent. So then he's looking at guys like David Benavidez over in the States, where you'd want to see those guys, Lockhorns, because they're of the same, you know, similar number of fights, similar profile. You want to see those guys have their defining fights. But I think 168 almost is drifting to being a dead division. And where, but then he's too small for 175. So I think Yubei G is in that really horrible position where he hopes more interesting people come up from 154 and he can box in middleweight.
But Terry, when you say he's stalled, I mean, he's stalled in terms of maybe boxing trophies and accomplishments, but commercially, from a marketing perspective, from a brand value, and from a boxing skills and ability and conditioning perspective, he's advanced, where Billy Joe has regressed.
So once a world champion, one's going to defend a British title against...
So I'll repeat that. So if we say, where can you stall or develop as a boxer? So there's fit, strength and conditioning, your fitness... There's your boxing skills, there's your marketability, there's how much money you make, and there's also what you achieve from the perspective of trophies or titles. In one of those elements, Billy Joe has moved on, progressed, in terms of winning a title. In all the others, he's regressed. He's worth less, he can command less for fights, he's less fit, his boxing is worse. Eubank hasn't won a title, a significant title, but his marketability, his commercial modelling, the opportunity he has going forward, He's a better boxer now. His strongest condition is better. So, in my eyes, one's stalled and one's moved on. It's Billy Joe who's stalled. Eubank Jr. who's moved forward.
Well, who you're talking all of this improvement he's made. Where has he had it tested? Just out of interest.
As from the perspective, well, that's a fair challenge. From my point of view, and what I saw in the fights he had since Billy Joe is the basics of trying to establish a jab is something that he didn't have before. He has that now. The understanding of the need to utilise a jab in the first half of a fight. The understanding of the need to work with someone and allow them to tire for you to really start doing your work from mid and short range is something he's now gathered. For him, that was, for me, he didn't have that ability before. And that, having that understanding enables him to beat the Billy Joe Saunders of this world.
So I'm still confused. So Billy Joe Saunders beats Chris Eubank Jr., goes on to fight Andy Lee, who at 160, Andy Lee at one point was a very respected fighter. You know, he was a world champion.
Sorry, respected by who?
Adam Lee, hold on. If Emmanuel Stewart has it in him to say this guy has talent, I'd take his word over anyone else's, if I'm being honest. But we're drifting. The central issue here is Eubank Jr. hasn't tested himself, so all this marketability, you're like, well, what's he sold out?
So
we're talking marketability, and on the 4th of February, he's a
marquee name on a big pay per view event that you, Terry, have just said is a great card.
Just simplify. Who would win the rematch? Just simplify it to that. Who would win the rematch?
From Terry's perspective, I completely understand. As Mayweather would say, the numbers don't lie. So Eubank doesn't have anything tangible at this stage to say. Though in a rematch, I do believe that Chris Eubank Jr. would win.
Really?
But over to another junior, who would win that rematch?
Listen, I agree with Adam to an extent that Chris Eubank Jr. has improved, but he still has some major fundamental flaws, including his feet. Yeah, Billy Joe could jab the head off him, man. I would want Eubank to win, but I'm telling you, I can't see him beating Billy Joe or anybody that can box. I think Groves would beat him. I think certain people would just beat him who have that ability to box. You know, he's a great fighter, but his boxing ability, I'm not too sure about. His jab, his right straight, his feet, he's got a lot of flaws.
I don't want to spend too much time.
He doesn't. There's something you have to, I think it comes a point when he's not. When you say great fighter, we mean in terms of the Western European orthodox style of fighting, straight, you know, being able to deliver good straight shots. That's not his style of fighting. You know, he doesn't really throw straight shots. That's not how he fights. You know, there comes a point when that's not just how he's built as a fighter. It's not how his body works. He's quite flat-footed, so he's never gonna be on his toes as a fighter. And that's not how he aims to fight, I don't think. you know, a lot of his fighting is about that, you know, that coming in, dipping below the belt, below the punchline. You know, it's a lot of very awkward, strange, unorthodox movements, but it's effective for him. And it was, you know, a lot of his mirroring stuff his dad did as well.
Yeah.
But if you keep comparing him to someone like Billy, from a European perspective, Western European perspective, is a pure boxer. Compare, you know, in an amateur sense, comparing him to him stylistically to someone like Billy Joe doesn't make sense. I think he's always pointless almost because they're just so different.
But my point is that style is the wrong style for him. He can't even the Langford guy would have caused him problems because he struggles with a pure boxer for me because of his feet, because of his deficiencies. You know, I think he struggles with a pure boxer.
Look, when you fight Gary O'Sullivan, Nick Blackwell, and Tom Doran, what your promoter's basically telling you, what your matchmaker's basically telling you is, we're never sticking you in with anyone who can jab again. We're just going to stick you in with these brawlers, these tough guys, and you can have it out with them. Because that's the only way we can see you winning. And, you know, when's the last time we saw Chris Eubank Jr. in there with a guy who can jab, who can use his footwork, who can slip a bit? We haven't. Since that Billy Joe Saunders fight, they haven't put him anywhere near someone who will provide him with a technical test, and there's a reason behind that. You know, he's not at that level yet where you imagine him being comfortable against any style that's thrown at him.
I guess the irony of that is that he's bought himself time. Like Ed said as well, with the commercial side of things, he's fought pretty average fighters, and he's managed to buy himself time, get on ITV, get a pay-per-view deal, and I'm sure he'll do good numbers on Saturday. So it's an interesting road, but I mean, Billy Joe was
Eubank to improve. You took jab, slip. It's Eubank Jr. It's about attrition. That's his style.
He's been allowed to develop in a way where he's gone round the back. Billy Joe Saunders is fighting in a sports hall. His last fight was in a sports hall.
Exactly.
So it speaks volumes. Exactly. It speaks volumes. But guys, let's move on. The heavyweight division. Yeah. AJ Klitschko press conference today. But first and foremost, Deontay Wilder. He's been confirmed against Gerald Washington.
That fight.
Would you say there was Ortiz talk? Would you say he was ducking Ortiz? He said he didn't want to fight someone who's had a history of drug usage or been banned for drugs with such a short space of time before the fight. What would you say about it?
I mean, so for me, it's going to be very brief. You know, I say at the highest level, I have very little interest in the heavyweight division at the moment because none of these guys are of the caliber where they deserve to be called world champions or haven't had the defining fights, as Terry would say, for me to acknowledge them as such. Deontay's coming back from more than the drug, you know, not one to fight people drug issues, coming back from a major surgery. So he's entitled to want a warm-up fight with someone who's less of a threat, particularly not wanting to fight a southpaw where he'd have to be very active with the right hand, the one he had surgery on, I believe. So that's fair enough. You know, he's entitled to having a warm-up fight. Junior, I don't know what you think.
No, I'm not the biggest Deontay Wilder fan, but I agree with him on this because look how many fights have been postponed, pulled off because of drug stuff. So if anybody has any past issues with drug taking or drug cheating or whatever, then you know I agree with him in that. I agree with the he needs a warm up fight as well, definitely. But I don't think he's ducking Ortiz per se. I think there's more of a he's planning for Joshua Klitschko, so he wants more of a taller opponent. I've heard him actually say that, and his team actually say that they wanted a taller opponent to get him ready for fighting guys his size or above. So that was particularly the plan here as well. And to fight someone like Ortiz on short notice.
Is that a spanner though? Would the Ortiz fight be a spanner?
Of course. Yeah. I think so. Especially if you're coming off the surgery, if you're coming off, you know, a long, you know, time out. I think so as well. And he's obviously got plans to unify the division, you know, against the Parkers, the Joshua and the Klitschko.
It's safe to say that it'll probably do well. I mean, Huey Fury would have been a good fight.
Nah, but Huey Fury's fighting Parker, or it looks like that's going to happen. You know, and I fancy Fury. I fancy Huey in that fight as well. I think Huey's a very underrated boxer. He's a bit of a spoiler, like Andre Ward. You know, I fancy him against Parker. I don't know what you guys think.
I think the issue with that division at the moment, probably a foundation of Ed's disinterest, is that there's a lot of fights which are just in the middle, just floating around. Mm. There's no real confirmation. There's nothing really concrete. Obviously, we've got AJ Klitschko coming up soon. I'm not sure how exciting that one will be, inside or outside of the ring. We'll have to see. But I just wanted you guys' take as well. March the 4th, Firmin Garcia. Terry, did you catch the press conference for that?
I'm not even that interested, actually. Both fighters bore me now, if I'm being honest with you. Firmin has nothing to say. Actually, visually, he's got a touch of the junior about him, hasn't he? A touch of the junior Johnson, you know, but with a ponytail. But then I'm also bored of Garcia and his dad. I mean, it's a fight of two people with very little charisma getting in a ring. No one has any real interest in it.
But you don't think it's a great fight?
I think we just lost interest.
In terms of boxing, you don't think that's a fight that we need to see?
What's Garcia done to warrant that?
Junior.
I'm excited by the fight. I've been waiting for this fight for a little while. I think they're very evenly matched, and I can't pick a convincing winner. I can see reasons why Thurman will win, and I can definitely see why Garcia can win. I was very appalled by his dad's comments and stuff like that in the press conference. I found that very unnecessary. He's done it before with Amir Khan as well. I think they need to pull him up on this now. But it added a bit of spice to it as well. You can see that there's genuine dislike, genuine tensions between the two camps as well. And I think we're going to get a good fight. I don't think we're going to get a knockout, but I think we're going to get a good fight. You know, so, and they're both evenly matched. And it goes some way into defining the welterweight division, you know, which has been the money division for however long.
I think it's definitely a good fight. The build-up will continue to be interesting. The fight itself, I'm sure it will be it'll be probably an enhanced version of Firmin Porter. But staying in and around there, Ed, I need your take on the Kell Brook situation. Amir Khan, I mean, it's a bit of a mess. It's a bit of a mess. Can you clear up the mess? Can you clear up the mess, please?
I think Amir needs to clear up the mess.
I think he's had to Amir's wife.
She gave him some tissues.
No, but jokes aside, I mean, where do you stand like that as a fan, from a fan perspective?
So, Amir's just come back from surgery, so I wouldn't expect him to be fighting Kell Brook straight to win. I'd expect him to have a warm-up fight anyway. I think what you have, unfortunately, and a lot of people try to blame Amir Khan for this, but it's not his fault. I think you have two fighters who are trying to cash out. They're both looking for their exit from the sport in the next kind of 18 months or 2 years, and trying to get the most money as possible with the least risk. They both just had a fight that was maximum money for each of them individually based on their own situations with high risk, and they both got hurt in the process. Mm. Now, the end game is about next 18 months, 3 or 4 fights, maximum money, little risk. Therefore, for Khan, and Khan's got guts, Khan wants a warm-up fight, then I think he'll fight anyone. Kell wants to keep his marketability, and he doesn't keep that by getting the hell beaten out of him so what he's trying to do is trying to force Khan's hand and force Khan to fight him now, which doesn't make any sense for Khan. So I don't think it's that messy. I think also Kell is trying to demand a 50-50 split, and that's more out of pride, I think.
Does he not deserve 50%?
I think he definitely deserves half, but I think you can talk relatively and actually. Relatively, they deserve to split 50-50. But in actual terms, 30% of the purse will be much more than Kell Brook's ever earned. Mm. So, I don't think he should let the fact that he might need to present hold up, prevent him from signing a contract with Amir Khan. Amir Khan is the bigger name. And it's one of the reasons, is the main reason I think the fight will generate the level of revenue it will generate. I'm still interested in the fight happening, but, you know, as time goes by, they both become less relevant, and probably move further away from their prime. So I think the fight has to happen this year. I don't know. Terry, your thoughts?
Kerry, should we give up? Should we just give up on that and move on?
I already have. So yeah. I've heard from people close to Khan. He doesn't want to give Brook the money. He'll fight him in an empty stadium with no cameras. He has no problem fighting Kell Brook. He doesn't want to give him that payday. Why? Because Khan knows he can call out most of the welterweights and get a decent payday. He doesn't need Brook in the way Brook needs Khan. Because if we look at the Brook model, Eddie Hearn won't take Brook abroad. He only ever took him abroad to win that world title. He won't take him to Vegas to fight because the matchroom model is all about the gate. It's all about the pay-per-view revenue. So he has to maximize Kell Brook in the UK, which is why he wants the Khan fight. There's no other reason. Eddie doesn't want it for boxing. He wants it because my theory is he's still paying off Tenerife. So Kell's probably still in the hole to him even after the Golovkin fight.
Terry, that's the second time Tenerife's been brought. One week you're gonna have to expand on what happened in Tenerife.
Well, no. We have an audience. Tweet the Tenerife Police Department and say there was an incident on your island involving our world champion. Do you know who did it? Do you know what's happened with it? Has there been any progress on investigations? Because we heard nothing. Not even a court case.
I'll send a tweet out, Terry, and see what I get back.
As Kelbrook said, he was minding his own business on the way home after a night out. He met a stranger and stopped to have a drink together. The stranger mentioned they like knives. Kel said he doesn't know that sort of thing. Only cowards use knives and weapons. After, at which point, the stranger then attacked him and stabbed him in his leg. That's Kelbrook's story, and I'm sticking to it.
Which is fine, but someone, well, clearly he knows who it was. But everyone's acting like we don't know who it is.
I guess the most important thing is that Kel can walk and box.
Yeah.
Continue to box.
And look, Kell Brook is in danger of becoming the modern day Aaron Pryor. And I've said this before. Aaron Pryor was probably, Aaron Pryor was the guy who was handing out beatings to Thomas Hearns, Howard Davis Jr., giving Sugar Ray Leonard trouble in the amateurs. They all came up in the same generation between 75 and about 77. He then, prior boxed, he was the Manny Pacquiao of his day. No one really wanted to fight him. Sugar Ray Leonard offered him the fight. He turned it down because he wanted more money. Then Sugar Ray Leonard retired, so that fight never happened. He managed to avoid Duran. He avoided Hearns.
Sorry. While you speak, I'm going to just say, I did notice, we'll talk about it another time, that analogy you slipped in about the Manny Pacquiao of his day, no one wants to fight him. So it's been noted. I disagree, but please carry on.
You disagree that Pryor was at Pacquiao of his day?
Well, you can't say that analogy and then say no one wants to fight him. Were people avoiding Pacquiao?
Well, until the money was right, people were avoiding
him. But anyway, we'll take that one offline. It's for another day.
So essentially, Brook, he might miss the Garcia fight. He might miss the Thurman fight. He might miss the Canelo fight in 154, Cotto fight. He might miss every meaningful fight because Hearn will not let him travel and Khan will not give him a payday. And at some point, he has to just go, I need to sign with Al Haymon.
It's interesting stuff. Guys, make sure you check out Box Media TV for the latest in Box Media, boxing news. We've got a feature of Ashley Dumetz, who's going to be fighting next week on the Dove Box Promotions card. In-depth, I guess, analysis into how he sees the fight, his training camp, working with the guys down at McGill's, working with the guys down at Fitzroy Lodge. Also got some
guys,
features.
I've had a sneak preview of the feature, and it's, I think, pro boxer early in his journey. It's a really interesting piece to get inside the mind of the fighter. And it's relevant. It's in New York Hall in a week and a half or so. So yeah, please do check out boxmediatv.com. Yeah. So guys, look, as we said, 2017 off to a cracking start. You can tell us in the studio here. There'll be some more debate raging on another few hours after this piece ends. But a lot to look forward to as well. If the rest of the year continues in the same vein as January, then I think it's going to be a great year for boxing. So I think watch this space. We'll be back with you in a couple of weeks to some more insights, some more analysis. But guys, look, it's Box Media Talks by Box Media TV. And until the next time, keep your guard up.